Hello and welcome to Just Markets Podcast 365. My name is Shay and today is May 9th, 2019. Well, I hope you all are having a wonderful, wonderful day and evening, and that we had an exciting, exciting day in the markets today. And when I mean exciting, I mean volatile. And the market really does not know what to think about what is going on with the trade negotiations, the trade war, and all of that under the sun. And that's why you're seeing all this volatility, right? And that's no news to you, because if you're an investor and you follow the markets, you know that is the case, right? So I do have a unique perspective on how this trade negotiations may go. So we know we'll talk more about that in a little bit. We will also briefly go over the Uber IPO, and it's going to be priced probably tonight and trade in the morning tomorrow. So we'll talk a little bit about that and where things are at there. We will also get into the Facebook news or opinions piece by Chris Hughes, where he talked about that Facebook needs to be broken up. And then lastly, we'll go through some technical analysis on the S&P 500, give you guys an update on that and where the MACD and the RSI and my model is showing where things are at. So those are the few things we'll get to today. And remember, if you guys have any questions at any time, you can email me at justmarcus365@gmail.com. All right, so let's talk about the trade war. So the first thing I want to talk about this trade war is how much power one person has over our capital markets. I mean, think about this, right? And I was watching this unroll, and I've been thinking about this for a while now, since weeks. But like, so today I wake up, you know, we have the futures that are down, you know, on the S&P 500, you know, 1% or and some change. And the market opens, and the first hour we're down 1.5%, 1.7%. I'm like, oh, today's gonna be an ugly day, and then President Trump has a press conference and he talks about really like everything in the world, like from the Simpsons, I guess, to everything else, you know, to the trade war, to his policies on Iran and everything else, right? So, but it's somewhere in there. He talks about on how he feels that there's a possible deal, and the market really turns from that point. It goes from being down 1.7%. Now it end of the day down 0.5%. And this is like really, really scary, right? That this market is so, so sensitive to what one individual says, right? And that is the President of the United States. I don't know about you guys, but that is a really scary way of looking at things. And that is, for me, that is, oh my God, I can't believe that this is actually happening to our capital markets. Now, if we're in a financial crisis and we're talking about a TARP deal or something like that by Congress, that's a whole different ball game. But based on a tweet or a conversation, this market moves like hundreds of billions of dollars in value. That is scary. That is really, really scary. All right, so I'm done with my rant about that. So let's talk about the trade war as a whole and the negotiation. So we started the week Monday where we had a tweet that we're going to raise the tariffs on the Chinese imports from 10% to 25% on the 200 billion, and then the other 300 some odd billion we're going to raise it also. And most of the 200 billion that's going to be raised to 25% will happen tonight at 12:01 p.m. So tomorrow it will be in effect. So that was the news over the weekend. And then we had news that on Monday night that the Lighthizer and Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, both are really bearish on the possible deal that they've been working on for months, and things don't look good. And you saw all of this volatility in the markets, and now we have an environment where we, you know, don't know what to say. You know, the Chinese delegations was about to cancel the summit or the negotiation, but then it went off, then it was back on, and now we have President Trump talking about that, hey, they reneged on the deal, and that took a huge market dump, you know, overnight. So you had the Asia and Europe took a huge dump. And then you had this morning, you know, he comes back and says, oh, you know, there's a deal is possible and all this stuff. He got a letter from Xi Jinping stating that he wants to get a deal done and this whole thing, right? So this is all in 1 week, all in like 4 days, guys. 4 days we had went through all of this, and that's why you're seeing such a volatile market. Yesterday the market was flat. Today, I mean, you're just seeing the market really float at the end of the days, but the sessions, the trade sessions have been quite volatile, and that is really, really scary based on just a conversation about one aspect. Now, we all understand why this trade issue is so important, right? So from the reason the market really doesn't like tariffs in this case is because it is a cost on earnings. It is cost for companies who export to multinationals, you know, multinational companies. It is a big, big major cost. So that's why you're seeing all this volatility. And that's why the markets don't like it very much. And there's uncertainty. Markets don't like uncertainty. And when you're talking about things like, you know, out in the public all the time, and you're, you know, you don't have a pure plan in place, I feel like this is what happens. Now, it seems to me, this is my take, right? It seems to me that there was a deal structure in place, and the Chinese reneged on it, and they felt, because of the Mueller report and everything else that's going on, that Trump would, President Trump would, is in a weaker position, and they can do what they want and not lose face, right? The Chinese can do what they want, and President Trump will accept any deal that needs to be accepted because he needs a win, right? But President Trump really called their bluff on this, right? By saying, hey, I'm going to raise tariffs on you guys if you are going to renege on this deal. And I don't think they thought that would happen, right? And they didn't perceive it that way, and it happened. And I think they were caught off guard. And that's really, really interesting. That is something that I think Xi Jinping and Liu, who is coming in for the negotiations, really didn't think would happen, and it happened. And I think that's why they were caught off guard. And that's why I think President Xi Jinping had to send a letter in order to make sure that the deal goes on, because this also does not look great for China, right? If the U.S. is putting so much pressure on them and they're working on a deal, and the Chinese, you know, delegation reneges on the deal in the last minute, how does the world perceive China, right, as a negotiator for trade and everything else out there, right? It does not look good for Xi Jinping, and it does not look good for a China's trade policy as a whole, right? So that's why you're seeing China coming back to the deal. And in my view, that I'm not sure if the deal will happen this weekend, but I think the chances of a deal getting done eventually just went up, because now both sides are really positioned where they need the deal. China doesn't want to look bad, and President Trump wants the deal, because I don't think he wants to put these tariffs on the U.S. economy, because he does not want to go into the elections next year, you know, from his perspective, right, and have a weak economy. Because if these tariffs do go up to 25% on the $200 billion, and he raises additional tariffs on the rest of the $300 billion in trade, the U.S. economy is guaranteed to slow down, and it will slow down. Yeah, we may get more revenue in fees or tariffs. I get that. But the U.S. economy is going to slow down because of it. So in my mind, I think both sides have a need to get this deal done. China doesn't want to look bad, and President Trump wants to make sure he goes into his reelection cycle on a strong footing. And I think he needs the economy. That's one single card he has, and that's a strong card in his mind that is going to help him get reelected, even after all of this baggage. He needs to have the economy, and I think that's why he wants to get a trade deal done. That's why he is talking about getting an infrastructure package done. So all these things, And I think that that's what he wants to do. Now, this has nothing to do with the way I think about the economy and what I'm thinking about the markets as a whole. You know, as you all know, I've talked about it in detail that I think the economy is weaker than people think. The top line numbers are padded, not intentionally, but because of one-time items that are not consistent with strong economic growth. So I personally feel this economy is not as strong as others think. Now, there are aspects of the economy that are definitely strong. You know, you have a strong job market, which is good. And that's one of the reasons why I feel that you're not going to have a recession. It's because you have such a strong job market. And so the economy can handle a few more things. But this trend, this strength in jobs numbers has been going on for about 9 years now, right? There hasn't been any change in trend. This trend has been shifting this way for a while. Now, there could be some incremental effects to the overall economy because of the tax cuts, but those are now kind of just depleting. Those effects are depleting. And now all you have is really back to where things were prior to those tax cuts. And I still feel that the economy is at a decent rate, is growing at a decent rate, and inflation is low, which is all good. But don't think it's going to grow anywhere near that 3%. And how can you grow above 3% long term when your population is slowing down, right? When the growth in your population is slowing down. When one day I have more time, I'm going to really put some information together for you guys and really talk about on how population growth globally is affecting global economic growth. And that's one of the major long-term threats to global GDP. All right, so going back to the trade deal, I really hope that we have a trade deal done here and it happens this weekend. I don't think it may happen this weekend unless things really turn around the other way and we get lucky. But I think it will get done in the next few months, but not probably this weekend. But if there is any positive sign and if there is some kind of momentum on the positive side, you can see this market bounce the other way, right? Based on just that news. And earnings have been coming in fundamentally better than expected, obviously. And we talked about that. Most likely they will come in better than expected because most firms on the street have learned on how to manipulate analysts and how to beat estimates. And that's what they do well. But revenue is coming in pretty much in line to what analysts expected, because it's one line of expectations that analysts can, that companies cannot manipulate, is the top line revenue number. And that is coming as expected. So we have revenue coming in as expected. You have GDP that's growing okay on, if you really look in detail, and you have a good fundamental environment there. And so only risk out there is this headline risk of trade wars and things like that. And these are usually just short-term fluctuations, right? So I think that this market will have a technical correction, and I think that's all it will be. I don't think we get to 10 to 15% unless we have a tariff that goes on in effect and there for a long period of time. Then we can have a significant downturn in the stock market, because then you can have a full-on trade war. And that is not good for anybody. I don't care who you are. If you're the Chinese, the US, Europe, I don't care who you are. It is not good for you. And because free trade, it has created a lot of prosperity, and fair trade, maybe now we'll get it. And that's going to create, even better prosperity for everyone. And I think that's the goal here. All right, let's talk about Uber. So Uber is expected to price its IPO tonight, and this would be transitioning this company from being a privately held firm in here in California to a publicly traded company. Now, this is one of the most anticipated IPOs that I can think of in recent history, right? Because it's been in business for close to 10 years. And we've talked about Uber in detail, so I'm not going to get into crazy amount of detail here, but definitely I'm saying that you can have, this is a major IPO, and how the IPO performs, the way it's priced and how it trades for the next few days could show you a lot about the market. Now, some of the things that I've been reading, right? These are all rumors, right? So this is articles I've read and opinion pieces I've read. And what I've heard and read is that Uber is, you know, pricing is IPO low at $45 a share. And that's where it'll probably come in at, those kind of things. And they're pricing it lower than expected. And they just want to keep it real and all these kind of things. And that's really, I'm paraphrasing there, right? And in reality, I think that because on how things turned out for Lyft and how bad the IPO looks so far for Lyft, meaning that the amount of price drop and where it's trading and how its earnings were this past a few days ago, and it reported a major loss, over $1 billion loss, and I think all that is really taking the market by, the investors who are buying these IPOs, these offerings, are being very careful, and there's probably not that much demand for it, or as much demand for this Uber IPO, or versus the amount of demand there was for Lyft, because Lyft kept raising its price versus the opposite here. And I think that that's what's going on, is that the demand is there, but it's not as strong as it was for Lyft. And that's why Uber has to lower its IPO price. Now, remember, as a company, Uber wants to make sure it gets maximum pricing for its offering, right? That's because they're IPOing, because they're raising capital, right? For their investors, they're private investors who want to divest out of the company now, right? And they want to get the maximum price possible. And I think they're having issues with getting the price they want. And I think that's what you're seeing here right now, is they're having major issues with that. And that's why you're seeing a repricing, and that's why you're seeing a lower price. As far as on how it's going to trade tomorrow, I think that it's going to trade just the way Lyft did. And I think it's going to spike up probably initially. You're going to have a lot of maybe some retail investors come in and buy it up and when it first starts trading, and then maybe it pops up. I can't tell the future, right? But I can tell you that usually the case, the IPOs are usually at a premium. And this could be the exception because there's been a lot of things that are not going their way right now. And it's easily possible that this may be more of a stable IPO, right? Because of the way it's being repriced all the time and the price is being lowered, not increased, right? And that's kind of what things may turn out. We'll see what happens. The evaluations, remember, if the price is lower, that means the valuation has come down. So when we talked about it a few weeks ago, we talked about it maybe $100 billion valuation on the company from 120, so all you had come down, and I think this may even come down way below that. So we'll see at the offering price what the actual offering price is and where things are now, but I would suspect it's going to be somewhere on 90, 85 or 90 billion is where I think that the initial IPO would be. All right, let's get into Facebook here a little bit. There's been a lot of talk about Facebook over the past few months, right? And you've all heard it. It's security concerns, sharing of data, fines, and everything else, right? Just mismanagement. And some of it, due to incompetence, others due to just pure ego, if you will, right? And the ability not to accept when you have made a mistake and those kind of things, right? So there's been a lot of talk about all these things. And so Chris Hughes, who's the co-founder of Facebook, and really has no real part of the current Facebook today, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times and talked about how and I'm not going to go into the article too much here, but I'll give you the gist of it, and you can go ahead and read the article yourself on the New York Times website. That's where I read it. And he just talks about the fact that he feels that, this is, I'm paraphrasing and summarizing it, all of this is Mark Zuckerberg is way too powerful for Facebook. He has way too much power. He has a 60% voting share. He can do whatever he wants with the company, even though it's a public company. That he feels is unacceptable. And he feels it's a monopoly. It owns Facebook. It owns Instagram. It owns WhatsApp. And it's really, really too big to handle, and it's too large, and it controls way too much information out there. And in essence, he feels that Facebook should be broken up because of all these reasons. He feels that it's a monopoly now. It controls all the market share and is influencing a lot of things. And he's making a lot of mistakes. And that's the reason, you know, in the gist of things, that's kind of what he's talking about. Now, I can't say that Chris Hughes doesn't have a point. I think he does have a good point around how much power Mark Zuckerberg has with Facebook. You know, having 60% of the voting shares is significant. And because in a free market environment, if you have 51% or majority share, you still have, you know, a lot of ability to really do anything you want. And for the size of the company that he has now, Facebook is, I think it's a major, major issue that Mark Zuckerberg owns such a large share of the company. Now, I'm a true believer in free market, right? And I think the market should determine whether a company should be broken up or not. But when you have a company that is 60% controlled by a single individual that's public, and that's at the market value where it's at, with hundreds of billions of dollars, to me, that is scary, actually. That is a point that he's making here. And I actually take that and say, yeah, if he owned 45%, that means that the board could outvote him and vote him out, or vote his against him and not be worried about, you know, getting stumped by him next time or getting fired off the board because they voted against him, right? Those kind of things. And I think that is, as a fiduciary, as most board members are, you know, they have to decide and vote on things and issues that are in the best interest of the shareholders, right? As a corporation, as a public company, that's who you are and what you do. As board members and as a CEO, you are a fiduciary and you have to make decisions what will help a shareholder value. And I think in this case that he doesn't own 60% of the company, but he has 60% of the voting share, right? And I think that's pretty unfair because the way they split the shares in A and B and all that stuff, right? So that's what's happening. And I think Chris Hughes has a point. And I think that there may need to be some kind of regulation around the amount of information you control. Same way what we did with, you know, with the oil companies in the 50s, if you will, right? And we broke them up because, you know, Standard Oil got too big and had way too much control over energy, and the Rockefellers had way too much power, and they were broken up because they became a monopoly. And is Facebook already there? Possibly. It had a pretty high growth rate, and it's acquired a lot of different assets, and it has become very powerful. There is no doubt there. I think there could be a regulation around on how a public company, one person cannot own more than 60% or 51% of a share of a company versus just, you know, because I think that as long as a company is growing at a rapid rate, a double-digit rate, and it's great for shareholders and they're adding to shareholder value, I think that's all fine. And if it doesn't, companies will automatically split up and break apart because that's the most efficient way of doing it, right? But when one person has one vision and has so much power, that is actually not all that possible. So I think that this guy has a point, and I think that maybe there is some truth to around either they need to be broken up or laws have to be changed where a one single individual cannot own this much of a public company. If you're a private company, it's a whole different ballgame. You can do whatever you want. If it's a public company, you have to be in favor of the shareholders. And I think that in this case, it may not be the best thing for the shareholders to have one individual have so much control over the company. All right. So I'm way over my time, but I'm going to quickly go through the technical analysis on the S&P 500, and then we'll talk about some of the articles tomorrow, right? So the S&P 500 was all over the place there, right? So we had Low of the day today was 28.36. The high was 28.75. And it ended the day near that high at 28.70, right? So it was a pretty volatile session. Now, the slow RSI, now this is all on daily charts, right? So those of you who follow technical analysis, you know what the difference is between hourly, daily, weekly, monthly charts, right? So this is a daily chart, daily price action. So basically on the slow RSI, we're seeing that the trend for the market is downwards at a midpoint now. So it's definitely not in the overbought position anymore. It's in the medium area now. And you have the MACD, which is also trending downwards. Also, there doesn't seem to be a break right now. And you have the MACD lines and the MACD bars that are all showing that the sell-off is accelerating, right? And that's kind of what the two areas of the technical analysis is showing. And overall, the market has broken somewhat of a trend of an uptrend here in the short-term space. Not long-term, but in the short-term space, it has broken up an uptrend. So we're seeing some downdraft. Now, technical analysis is only one aspect of everything we look at, right? So we look at fundamentals, we look at everything else. And it seems as though that the technical analysis, the sentiment in the market right now is slightly negative, which obviously it is, right? It doesn't take a genius to figure that out. And I'm definitely not a genius here, but definitely the trend is currently negative and doesn't seem signs here right now to show this market can turn up the other way and, you know, and break to new highs. Now, if you're looking at the market over the past, say, 24 months, we've had really about three tops in this range, right? So the first top happened in January of 2018, right? So if you go back and look at the history, you know, your chart for the S&P 500, you go back and look at, you know, January 26th, before the first time these tariffs were announced, you were at, the high was at 28.72 and some change, right? And then we had another top in the market about 29.54, and that was in October, right? The beginning of October of last year again. And then now we're at 29.54, and now we're having another pullback. So it seems like you've had this, you know, even though each time we had that top, we had a slight, you know, we broke above just a little bit, but it wasn't like we went from 28, you know, 30 something to, you know, 3000 or 3500, right? It went all the way from there to 29.53 to now we're at 29.54. So it's within this tight range when it seems like the market tends to lose a lot of steam when it comes to that. Now, you can blame headline risk, you can blame other things. Yes, there are reasons or excuses, if you will, for each time why the downturn occurred. But the fact is, whatever the reason it may be, it has happened three times now in the past 18 months time frame, right? So you're seeing some exhaustion with investors when the market reaches these points. And I really wish this market would break up to the upside and really break out of this resistance level, right? And it really hasn't, and is staying within that range. So I think that's really interesting. Now, I am way over my time that I usually want to do these podcasts for. So I apologize for that, but I just wanted to get this technical analysis in. Definitely, we're seeing some weakness on the technical side. So just be mindful of that. You know, a trade deal over the weekend or tomorrow or whenever could help us break out of it, and we won't have to talk about this ever again. But the fact is that there is some resistance here. We have some fundamental issues in the economy. Earnings are coming in better than expected. Obviously, that's known, but revenues are coming as expected. Manufacturing sector is getting weaker, and these tariffs will only make it weaker if they do go in and are implemented for a long period of time. You're definitely going to have a slowdown then, and maybe next year. This time of next year, you can have a really weak economy. I don't know about a recession. I think that recessions are all but rare these days, because the central banks around the world have learned on how to deal with them and foresee them. And even if we have a recession, barring some major bubbles bursting or major leverage risk, you know, it's going to be pretty shallow anyways. So I just don't think that that there's a whole lot to worry about all that much. But definitely this market could be in a bear market territory, and the economy can still be growing, right, with a bear market, right? So, but I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying that these are the risks out there. This is what I'm seeing. And this is what matters when you're an investor. All of this, you have to look at it all the time, right? So that's what I'm doing. So anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, please rate us five stars on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe and follow us so you'll get those downloads as soon as we have a new one available. With that, I wish you all the best. Happy trading. Until next time. Take care.
Please remember, this podcast is for information purposes only, and presenters will make every effort to provide accurate information, but assumes no responsibility for accuracy. You should not construe any such information or other materials as legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and there cannot be any assurance that the future performance of any specific investment strategy or products or non-investment related content made reference to directly or indirectly in this podcast will be profitable, equal any corresponding indicated historical performance levels, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Due to various factors, including changing market conditions or applicable laws, the content may no longer be reflective of current opinions or positions. Moreover, you should not assume that any discussion or information contained in this podcast serves as a receipt or as a substitute for personalized investment advice from your advisor. To the extent you should have any questions regarding the applicability of any specific issues discussed, you are encouraged to consult with your professional advisor of your choosing.